I've been to several countries, or quite a number. This is my first visit to Sweden, so I'm very happy to have this opportunity, which is due to Venerable Sumaratna's invitation to me. And he came to my nun's island one evening, and we don't have electricity. And he and four other monks came in the pitch dark, and because they got a little late, and invited me to come here and talk to you. So I'm very happy to have this opportunity. And he also made up the list of talks, so I don't really have a choice what to talk about. He did want to discuss it with me, but our communication to Germany somewhat got interrupted. The letters and things didn't reach me, but it's fine, it's no problem. The first topic that he chose for me to talk about, he chose for my list of cassettes and tapes which I had handed him, and I think the title intrigued him. It's called The Miracle of Being Awake. And it's actually not something I thought up. I don't know if you've heard of Thich Nhat Hanh. He's a former Vietnamese monk, and he's a very devoted Buddhist peace worker. He now lives in France, and he thought up this title, and I have to admit that I stole it from him. But it is a title which he and also I use for describing mindfulness. Now, if you've heard anything about the Buddha's teaching, you must have heard about mindfulness. You can't get away without it. But it is something that we don't really pay enough attention to. And so it is worthwhile to discuss it. And we can discuss it on two different levels. Mindfulness is the miracle of being awake. And we can think about it on a worldly level. Now, the worldly level means that we pay very good attention, but without getting worried, angry, discouraged, without getting involved. We just pay attention. But on a transcendental level, it brings us nearer to absolute reality. So we'll have a look at the worldly level first, because that's where we're all living on this day-to-day level. And mindfulness is the one thing that makes our daily living easier. And so it should be of considerable interest to everyone. It is the one thing that facilitates our human relationships, and it also facilitates our daily work that all of us have, duties and responsibilities, and the things that we have to take care of. The Buddha said this about mindfulness. He said, it's a one way for the purification of beings, for the overcoming of pain, grief, and lamentation, for the final elimination of all suffering, for entering the noble path, for realizing Nibbana. I don't know whether all of you know the word, maybe Nirvana, which is Sanskrit, Nibbana, which is Pali. In my tradition, we use the Pali. Now you can see from this statement that it starts out with a worldly level. The purification of beings, the overcoming of pain, grief, and lamentation. That's our worldly level. Then we go to the transcendental level, which says the final elimination of all suffering, entering the noble path and realizing Nibbana. Now, what do we do to facilitate our daily lives? We have to look at this mindfulness as paying attention to ourselves in the first instance, which is the internal mindfulness, which is where it really starts. We can branch out to external mindfulness, but only after having got a really good grasp on internal mindfulness. We have four possibilities of being mindful. The first one is body, second one is feeling, third one is thinking, and fourth one is content of thought. Well, let's have a look at body. This body of ours does all kinds of actions. From the moment it opens its eyes until the moment it closes it again at night. So the action in between are manifold, and some of them totally unnecessary, and some of them not even desirable. So our first instance is to be able to pay full attention to what this body is doing. Now, how can that purify us? There's two ways it can do that. The first way is that we won't do anything which we would be sorry for later. Very simple. We just do all the things that we really think we should be doing. And in the second instance, it purifies, because while we're paying attention to the action of the body, we cannot have any other problems in mind. We are luckily so constituted that we can only have one thought at a time. The Buddha said we can have 3,000 mind moments in the blink of an eyelid, but not all at once. And sometimes we do say, oh, leave me alone, I've got 10 things on my mind. But we don't have them all at once. We have one after the other in very, very rapid succession. So when we are actually paying full attention to what this body is doing, we cannot think about all the things we don't like, or all the things we'd like to have, all the things that are bothering us, or how we can escape from all this botheration. None of this is possible. All we can do at that time is be fully attentive. So we have two ways of purifying ourselves. We don't do anything that we don't want to do, because we won't, so that we have to be sorry for later, and we can't be worried or fearful or anxious. Now that, as a constant practice, will make a decided difference in a person that does that. The whole of the teaching of the Buddha is aimed at changing us, changing our awareness, changing our conscious awareness into a direction which transcends the human problems. Now, this change that can take place is gradual. We have to be patient with it. It is slow, but it is definitely discernible. It is definitely discernible in someone who has practiced. The Buddha's path consists of two things: pariyatti and patipatti, study and practice. We have to know, not everything he said, but at least enough to know what to do. Now, in this particular instance, what we're looking at is not a religion. What we're looking at is a human practice on a spiritual level, which starts, of course, exactly on the level where we're at, the human level, the day-to-day activity that everyone is beset with and has to attend to. And on this human level, we start practicing so that eventually we have a spiritual path mapped out for ourselves where we can gradually attain to greater purification, purity within us, and come nearer to an absolute reality. Most people, especially in their young years, do try to find out what this world is all about. Since it doesn't seem to be sensible, or since it doesn't seem to have an answer, eventually they give up and get married and have kids and make money. But this kind of question does remain in the background. What is this all about? Why are people killing each other? And why are they stealing from each other? And why do I have to work so hard to get enough food and car and clothing and all the rest of it? And then it subsides again. And once in a while, it does come back. And the answers are there. The answers can be found. But just as a given, they don't do much good. Because the Buddha was one spiritual teacher who didn't want anyone to believe anything. He wanted people to have enough confidence to start practicing. And as they started practicing, to find out for themselves whether what he said was true or not. If it was, keep on practicing. If it wasn't, never mind, try something else. Or go back to what you were doing anyway. And this is one of the great gifts that he has given us, that he constantly admonished everyone who listened to him to find out for themselves, not to believe anything, but just to give it a try. And here, this is one of the most practical and most fundamental practices that he propagated, and that we are still able to follow exactly the way he taught. It doesn't have the connotation of religious rites or rituals. It doesn't have even devotion or any kind of particular adherence to organization in it. Mindfulness is a human quality. We all have it. If we didn't, we would all be dead already. We would have been run over by the first truck that came along. We have enough mindfulness to keep alive. We have enough mindfulness not to cut our fingers off when we peel potatoes. We have enough mindfulness to answer the phone and say what is necessary to say, to dial the right numbers or press the right buttons nowadays. We have enough mindfulness to do the things which are necessary for our survival. And that's exactly where we stop. And yet, that is foolishness. Because survival is a guarantee it will not happen. Everybody is guaranteed to die. So to just have enough of mindfulness to manage to stay alive is shortchanging ourselves, because we have the quality and we also have the ability to do much more than that. And having this seed within, having that ability within, we can of course expand upon it. We can use it so that it becomes a much greater part of our mental continuum. We all think constantly most of the time, and at night we dream. So we're using our mind practically without a break. We don't even know, unless we have been successful meditators, what it's like not to think. In fact, we all think it's necessary to think, and we even have a whole philosophy that says so. It is also a mistaken view. But seeing that we are doing it, we might as well do it in a manner and in a way which will be helpful to us. Most of the time our thinking is concerned with what we want to get and what we want to get rid of, what we like and what we don't like, about the future, either worrying about it or planning it, or hoping for it, or the past, regretting it, or remembering it, or enjoying it, and thinking the good old days were much better. But that is a useless enterprise. The past is irrevocably gone, and the future will never happen. Because when it happens, it's called the present. It cannot happen. So it's a totally useless thing to do, and yet everybody's doing it. And only the meditator knows that that's what we're doing. Everybody else takes it for granted that that's how it is. Mindfulness brings us to this moment. Because when we watch the actions of our body as our first fundamental possibility, we've got to be here right now. And life cannot be thought about. It's got to be lived. And we can't live anything else except this one moment. The future and the past are only ideas. Living life is now. And that's why mindfulness is being awake. It is as if, up to then, one has had a sort of a fog which was covering over all the things which are really happening, so that one doesn't have to pay real attention, because it just could be unpleasant. And the past, well, we can filter out that which was unpleasant if we're so inclined, or we can put our mind exactly on that was unpleasant and be sorry for ourselves. And the future we can try and figure out to be just the way we want it to be. But the present is the only thing that's existing. So mindfulness brings us into the here and now. But it doesn't have a discriminating quality. It doesn't have a judgmental quality. You have, for instance, to be totally mindful in order to break into a safe. If you're not, the police will get you in very few minutes. You've got to be absolutely mindful. But the discriminating quality is lost. There's no discrimination that this is good or bad. So co-joined with mindfulness is what is called the attention to the understanding, the wisdom quality. It's called mindfulness co-joined with clear comprehension. The Buddha put the two together because mindfulness means knowing. Just knowing what's going on. But clear comprehension is understanding. So when we watch our body's movements, we will at the same time use this clear comprehension quite naturally. Just imagine crossing a busy street. And you watch the walking, but you have at the same time clear comprehension that you have to keep out of the way of the cars for survival. So the clear comprehension has this quality. It has a quality of knowing what we're doing, the purpose. The purpose, the means to accomplish the purpose, and then the discriminating quality of knowing whether these means are really the best means and whether they are wholesome, good, whether they are within a quality that we can approve of. And at the end of all that, we can make can ascertain whether we have actually accomplished our purpose. Now you can see how quickly this would work when you cross a street. What is the purpose? I want to get on the other side. What are my means? I have to watch out that nobody's going to run over me. Is this wholesome? Yes, because it keeps me alive. Have I accomplished it? Yes, when I get across, I have accomplished it. It's like that. But mindfulness makes it possible to know that that's what we're doing. And to know what we're doing makes all the difference. That makes us being awake instead of asleep on our feet. Being awake means paying full attention. So if we watch our body, we will not do anything that is harmful to us or others. We are protecting ourselves from harm, and we're protecting others from harm at the same time. And we cannot have any kind of ideas about how we're going to arrange the future and how we should have arranged the past. We are living in this moment. And all this is a purity aspect. A spiritual path is that which purifies. a spiritual path is that which in Christianity is called man does not live by bread alone. And in our day and age, I think this is one of the most important words that we should remember, because we've got a lot of bread and it's easy to come by. Anybody who's willing to do a bit of work can get plenty of it. But forget that we cannot live by that alone. There has to be more than that. And there is dissatisfaction in the heart when there isn't more. There is a feeling of there should be something else that will satisfy me. And then we look for a little more bread or a different kind or something to put on top of the bread, or maybe even a bread in a different country or something else that looks a little more colorful, or maybe even a different person that might have some new ideas. But none of it satisfies in the long run, because that satisfaction that we're looking for and that we want is in our own hearts, and nobody can put it in there. We've got to put it in ourselves. And as we do so, as we find out that it isn't outside of us, but it's inside of us, we're going to start paying more attention. Our next fundamental possibility of paying attention to ourselves is of other feelings. Now, these are possibly our most important purification aspect. And I'm going to talk about that in more detail this afternoon. But I want to explain the mindfulness that is connected with them. We all have the mistaken idea that we are living according to our thinking. We may be making our money according to our thinking. How much of it we've got, that's how much money we make, maybe. But we don't live accordingly. We live according to our feelings. We are reacting to our feelings. Everything that happens to us creates a feeling. Now, people who meditate become aware of that after a while. But the ordinary person that hasn't taken time out to sit and have a self-examination and introspection, that sort of person still thinks that we're living according to thinking. If we were to live according to thinking, there'd never be war, there'd never be fighting, arguments. You can ask anybody at all whether it is a good thing to do, a useful thing to do, whether it is in accordance with the beliefs that they have. Nobody will agree that it's a good thing to do, that it's a reasonable thing to do. In the thoughts, everybody agrees. In the feelings, that's a different matter altogether. We have, as we know, 5 senses, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling. And according to the Buddha's way of explaining it, thinking is a 6th sense. And we even use that in the English language. We say, oh, I've had a 6th sense about that. In other words, I've thought about it beforehand. Everything that we touch with our senses creates a feeling. If we see something beautiful, we have a pleasant feeling. If we hear something ugly, like somebody is accusing us or abusing us, telling us all sorts of horrible things about ourselves, we get an unpleasant feeling. And the same happens with our thinking process. Every bit we think creates a feeling. So to watch our own feelings is the most fundamental way of getting inside of ourselves, purifying ourselves, and realizing that real satisfaction can only be within, not without. That which we're looking for, there's nobody who isn't looking for that, is happiness and peacefulness, satisfaction. And those are feelings, and they're within a person. And they cannot be brought about from sticking something into us, from some outside source. Because there's no opening to stick happiness, satisfaction, peacefulness within. These are outer contacts which we make. So if we watch our feelings, we will realize that we are reacting to them instinctively, impulsively. When it is a pleasant feeling, we want to continue it. We want to get it again. If we see something beautiful, we want to maybe even have it, if it's available. We want to at least see it again. We want to be near it. And if we hear something awful, we want to get away from it as quickly as possible. And it is, unfortunately, the way the world runs. This is how our economy runs. They're selling things which are making and producing pleasant feelings in us. We couldn't sell it otherwise. Everybody has to think of something which will produce a pleasant feeling of some sort. Otherwise, they're going to go out of business. And if they have some new idea, something that produces a little better feeling, then they've got a good business. And why are we playing the game with them? Because we haven't paid enough attention. And the game we're playing is that we are spending our whole life trying to get away from unpleasant feelings and running after pleasant ones. And it is a futile occupation. It is a life not well spent. And yet, 99.8% of the world does it. Because they haven't, first of all, haven't heard about it, and secondly, haven't taken time out to sit down and find out for themselves that that's what they're doing. It is a time not well spent because it's an impossible trial. It cannot be done. Every human being has at least 50-50% each side, pleasant and unpleasant. It is a foregone conclusion that this particular effort we're making will never meet with success. And if you think about it for one moment and think back about your lives, we've had both, no? Pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling. Get a toothache, unpleasant. Get a cold, unpleasant. Eat something nice, pleasant. Don't want a cold, don't want a toothache, want to eat something nice, want to see something nice. Yet we can't win. We've got both sides. That's the way this is arranged, this realm in which we're living. And to try and get away from that which we consider unpleasant and constantly get that which is pleasant is what keeps our economy running. And in some countries it runs better than in others because people have a better idea of how to run economies, that's all. But no real satisfaction. And especially in an economy, which is in a country such as this, which is well known to be one of the highest economies in the world, it must be clear that complete satisfaction cannot be attained like that. Although we have the opportunity in these countries to get as many pleasant feelings as our monies will allow, the unpleasant ones come again. But that's not all that they come again, the unpleasant ones. The worst part of it is that the pleasant ones don't last. And that's why we have to continually get new ones. Just imagine for a moment that you have sat down to a very, very nice meal in a friend's house. And you're enjoying it. And after the meal is over, you say to your friend, "That was a lovely meal. I really enjoyed that." And your friend says, "Look, I've got that much food. Why don't you stay here and eat for another 2-3 hours? Absolute misery. Can't be done. Can't be done physically. Can't be done mentally. Can't be done emotionally. It's got to finish after 20, 25, 30 minutes. It has to. The same, for instance, maybe you feel very cold, which wouldn't be surprising in this weather. So you go and take a hot bath in your friend's house, and you feel nice. Now it's nice and warm. So you say to your friend, "That is nice in the hot bath. I really like that." The friend says, "Look, I've got plenty of hot water. You can stay another 6-7 hours. Impossible, isn't it? Can't be done. 30 minutes at the very most. That's already maximum. You've got to get out. So you've got to go again tomorrow and the next day. And in the meantime, you get cold again. And you get hungry again. This is the way we are made. There is no getting out of that. But the only thing we can get out is our constant search for the pleasant and the constant running away from the unpleasant feelings. That we can get out of. We can look at the feelings and say, ah, they have come, there they are. And we can even say to the unpleasant feelings, hello, my friend, what are you trying to teach me? And then we have a way of dealing with ourselves which will make a decided difference. Because if somebody, for instance, which happens to everyone, says something which we don't want to hear, it may be critical, judgmental, unpleasant, stupid, anything at all, happens to everyone. And this unpleasant feeling arises, which will give rise to anger. If we are mindful and attentive, we will realize that, aha, unpleasant feeling, and now I'm getting angry. What's the use of that? Why don't I learn something? Why don't I just look at the whole thing and let it disappear again? I know that all my pleasant feelings have gone, because I haven't got them anymore. So obviously this unpleasant one must go again too. And there we have learned a lesson which in daily life is immeasurably valuable. We cannot be touched if we can keep this going. We're invulnerable. Because at that time of watching the coming of this feeling and realizing everything else is gone, this one it will go too, we have known there is anger, but we won't get angry. We won't get upset. We won't get worried. And everybody's life contains plenty of each. There's no getting away from that. The highest economy in the world will not protect us from that. Because we don't live according to that. We live according to our feelings. And they are constantly changeable. So here we have, in the first instance, the possibility of our daily life becoming more harmonious, more peaceful, more of an even peace. It's not so much up and down. I usually compare this to a seesaw. You know what a seesaw is? Something children sit on and go up and down like that. Huh? That's the way we do. Although we are apparently fully grown, but the seesaw we sit on is not made of wood. It's a seesaw of our feelings. When they are pleasant, we are up on top. But we know already underneath that we're going to have to come down. And as we are up on top, it feels also a little shaky. We have to hang on to this feeling, this pleasant feeling, and then bang, down it goes, and we hit the ground, and it hurts a little, and up it goes. But if we have this facility of paying full attention and knowing that it has come and will go, because all other feelings we've ever had are also gone, then we can sit on this thing, on the fulcrum, without going up and down, up and down. Now, some people, of course, say, oh, I like going up and down. All right, that's fine. That's perfectly all right. But if one has hit the bottom often enough, one doesn't like it anymore. It isn't pleasant. And one realizes that one can be actually at ease and peaceful, no matter what hits one from the outside. And then the transcending starts. This is where, in the world, we have the possibility of changing our attitude. And this is not to be confused with being totally oblivious to what's happening. It is not indifference. It is not paying no attention and saying, oh, well, let them do it, whatever they like. It's nothing to me. It is something entirely different. It is finding inner peace. It's finding that inner peace which accepts whatever there is, doesn't try to go against it, and realizes its changeable nature. That is what mindfulness can do for us. Not trying to go against it can be likened to just going with the flow instead of stemming oneself against it. If one stems one's hand against a door that doesn't open, it hurts. That's what happens to us all the time. We don't want the way, things the way they are. We'd like them a little different. And therefore it hurts, because we are constantly trying to change something. If we see the flow, that it changes by itself, we don't have to do anything about it. It's constantly changing. Our feelings are sometimes pleasant, sometimes unpleasant, and they're constantly going up and down. Then some of our resistance goes away, and we don't need to have that inner feeling of, if only it were different. That is a way of finding... within us, in our daily lives, a way of being peaceful. But it is also a way of realizing that only within can we find that what we're looking for. It isn't to be found outside. Because the first time that we're able to not resist what's happening, even though it may be very unpleasant, and the first time that we do not have to respond with anger when the anger arises, but come back to being at ease and at peace, we realize it's entirely up to us. And that is the first moment when the outside world is known to be what it is, just triggers, to trigger us to respond. And when we don't accept every trigger, and then go back inside of us and realize without all this triggering, we can be quite at ease and at peace without having always a pleasant feeling to rely upon. That's when spiritual practice starts. That's when we realize we can go beyond our attachment to the worldly things. We have can find something that is much more in line with what we really want, namely that happiness that everybody wants and should have, that inner joy that everybody would like and should have, but which cannot be bought, and it can't be found anywhere except within. So when we pay full attention to what's going on with ourselves, we have a chance for that. We have the first time we get a chance to do something about ourselves, and we will no longer blame the triggers. It isn't the common market, it isn't the neighbor's radio, it isn't the children, it isn't the dogs that bark, it isn't even the weather. It's in here, and that's all it is. And when we get to that point where it is no longer our partner, when it's no longer the people around us, when it is only up to us, then we can start practicing the purifying of our own emotions. Now, only the attention to these emotions will make that possible. And the attention to the emotions, whatever they are, not just the ones that we approve of, not just the ones that we like, but any of them. They come and they go, and they are triggered by outside circumstances. But being able not to respond makes it possible for us to realize that it's ourselves that are either at war or at peace. It's nobody else. Peace is not a document that people sign. Peace is a feeling within. Although it's always thought to be a document, and sometimes it helps to stop the shooting, that it all it does, it never brings the feeling. All it does is stop people from shooting off their cannons or whatever they're working with. The third aspect of watching ourselves are our thoughts, the thinking process. And there we can get quite a shock. We would never dream of walking outside of our house with dirty clothes, and we wouldn't dream of walking outside without having washed ourselves so that we are clean and proper for public consumption. But we do walk outside of our houses with thoughts which are not for public consumption. There are plenty of thoughts in everyone's mind that would be better off if they were dry cleaned. And that is something that we will only be able to do with mindfulness. And if we keep on watching ourselves, we will find one day that it isn't the body that counts, it's the mind. The mind is the master, the body is the servant. And practically the whole world looks after the servant, spends enormous time, effort and money on the servant, and refuses to allow this servant to grow old, decay and die in peace. And the master, who is in charge of all this, totally forgotten and neglected. And yet, a body without a mind, if you have a body lying here in front of us, without a mind, you can cut it to pieces, no argument, nothing, it's perfectly all right. But have a mind in it, and you've got a big tragedy. It's a mind that makes the body do whatever it is doing. If your mind hadn't told you to come here today, your bodies wouldn't be sitting here. Neither would mine. Without the mind is nothing. And yet we spend enormous amounts of our energy, our efforts, and our money, which is also energy, on keeping the servant in order. Now just imagine for a moment that you have a servant in your house, which in some countries is still common, I don't suppose it's here, and everything is done for that servant and nothing for the master of the house. Absolutely nothing, totally neglected, just let him run around, whatever he likes. Well, that house isn't going to work very well, that household. But if you look after the master of the house very well, everything done to keep the master of the house in order, the servant will have to fall in line. There's no two ways about it. And this is what goes on within us. We have a master, the mind, and we have a servant, the body. We wash the body, we dress it nicely, we give it a nice rest at night, we have excellent food for it. We take it on a holiday. We even give it some exercise, probably. And what about the mind? Does it get washed? Does it get a rest? Does it go on a holiday? Does it get some exercise? Usually nothing of the kind. And yet, to do that for the mind is so much more important than doing it for the body, it can hardly be expressed in words. That doesn't mean we should neglect the body. It's foolishness to neglect the servant. You don't get a good servant then. If you neglect the servant completely, you won't get any work out of that servant. In Sri Lanka, where I live, that is well known. You can't neglect the servant either. But if the master is not in order, what kind of household can you get? Chaos. That's why we live in a chaotic world. It's chaotic not because it's meant to be, but it's because we are not paying enough attention. We are not paying attention to where it counts. So when we start paying attention to what goes on in our mind, we'll get a shock. We'll be walking around outside, nicely dressed, all nicely washed, nicely had a nice sleep at night, everything is fine, good breakfast, and the mind is thinking all sorts of negative thoughts. It's not even happy. It's either worried about the future, it's fearful of some imaginary thing that may happen, it dislikes somebody or something. It has all sorts of negativities. Now, not constantly, of course, it also has positivities, and all of a sudden one feels much better. And because one feels much better all of a sudden, because the mind is being positive, one thinks, again, that it must have something to do with a trigger that made it think positively. Some person, some particular thing that one sees, hears, tastes, touches. So one tries to repeat that. One tries to get the same food, meet the same person, have the same opera, have the same book, or whatever it may be, where the mind all of a sudden has a positive thought. But if one pays enough attention, and it means a matter of enough, one realizes finally it's got nothing to do with all that. It's the mind that does it. The mind that thinks negatively or positively. It's where we put our conscious awareness. That's what we've got. We know nothing that isn't within our conscious awareness. Absolutely nothing. If we hadn't heard that some men have walked around on the moon, wouldn't be in our conscious awareness, and I know thousands, probably millions of people that haven't heard about it, so it's not in their conscious awareness, so to them it doesn't exist. Non-existent fact. For us it exists. But there's a lot that we don't have in our conscious awareness, and it doesn't exist for us. And when we start seeing what our mind does and how it affects us, not only in our happiness and peace, but also in our physical well-being, then we start doing something about it. And of course, the most important thing to do about it would be meditation. And that is a separate subject, entirely separate subject. But we have another possibility of doing something about it, and that is awareness, watching. And there again comes clear comprehension. What's the purpose of this thought? Am I having a good purpose? Is this the good means? Is it wholesome, healthy, positive? Have I accomplished a purpose? Or is it just nonsensical and unhappy making ideas I have in the mind? And that brings us to the fourth possibility of being attentive to ourselves, and that is, does the mind contain something which will be purifying, wholesome, helpful? Or does a mind contain something which is of the opposite nature? And there we learn, if we pay enough attention, to drop one and keep the other going. The Buddha called this the four supreme efforts. You've got one of the most valuable possibilities of the beginning of a spiritual growth within, which will bring you further and further along a path away from materialism. Not to let an unwholesome thought arise which has not yet arisen, not to let an unwholesome thought continue which has already arisen, to make a wholesome thought arise which has not yet arisen, to make a wholesome thought continue which has already arisen. In other words, don't let anything negative enter the mind, because you won't change the world with it, but you change yourself, namely towards an unhappy state. And if you haven't got any wholesome thought yet, make it come up. You won't change the world with it, but you change yourself. You can think of your mind as if it was a wet driveway on which a truck is being run back and forth. If the grooves that the truck makes are of the negative kind and it runs along those grooves over and over again, it's very hard to get it out. But if it runs along the wholesome, the happy, the peaceful thoughts, then it becomes a habit. And that kind of person will find it much easier to have the kind of peace within that everybody wants and hardly anybody gets. You have listened patiently enough and long enough, and we're going to have a little break, and after that, during the break, you can think up some questions if you like and ask some questions, which will be nice.